Good morning and welcome to House Plans. Glad you could be with us today. Chris from County Bank Mortgage in the house. Keith Clark from the Buyer's Broker here to take your questions, calls, and comments. We're going to need them today, Keith.
We will.
We're a man down.
But, you know, we do pretty good when we're...
We do all right.
Yeah. I mean, we spend enough time together that we could have a conversation about real estate all day long, could we not?
24/7.
We could talk about it.
We could.
Yeah.
We could.
In a wide-ranging variety of... topics.
Absolutely. But we'd love to talk to you. If you've got a question about buying, selling, anything to do with real estate, give us a shout this morning. 866-442-7553. Or, of course, you can hit us up on the text line 71307. That's 71307. The most popular question for me this week is, what impact are rising rates going to have on the overall market? And I think it's a an interesting conversation. And then the follow up question of that is, where are rates? And of course, rates are, you know, sometimes a little bit below five, sometimes a little bit above five, but you know, rates are still great.
I did see an article yesterday that said, as people become, or buyers become, more aware and concerned about rising interest rates. We had a pullback last week, right, a little bit?
Yes.
And it seemed like a lot of people jumped in that were sitting on the sidelines. So I think now that the public in general understands that we're in a trend of rising interest rates.
Right.
Even though it may be faster in some months and slower in others, they're going to take advantage of any dips.
Sure.
For lack of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, you know, that's one of the hardest things to answer.
Yeah,
is,
no,
do I lock now?
Yep.
Do I wait? And, you know, what we generally advise is, you know, if you like this rate and you like this payment, we would recommend locking, because the pain of it going up is much, much more difficult than it dropping a little bit and making you happy. And, of course, it tends to move up faster than it moves down. So you may get a quarter point jump, and then it may take, you know, on the downside, it may take a month.
It may never get back.
It may. That's exactly right. So if you like the rate, lock it.
That's right.
And make sure that you're covered. And, you know, that way you kind of know where you're at and what's going on and what the payment's going to be, and you don't have to worry about it.
Now, where did you say J.D. was, Chris?
J.D. is in Columbia for the Carolina football game.
Yeah, and can you tell me why?
I don't know. I really don't. He, I tell you why, because Drew wanted to go. That's
yeah.
why.
No,
yeah,
I'm just teasing. Absolutely. I hope he's not listening.
Yeah, he probably is not. I think he went down last night because I think they went to the basketball game.
Okay, yeah.
But
Drew's a sports kid, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we do have our first question of the day, and it's, you know, how do you get rid of your PMI on an FHA loan, which is a great question. And dependent upon when you got that FHA loan, so if you got it sometime in the last 3 or 4 years and you did maximum financing at 96.5% on a purchase, then and you did a 30-year, then the answer is never. It's never going to go away.
Well, you can get rid of it with the loan, right?
Yeah, that's the only way you get. It's kind of like getting
you can't
married.
Keep the loan and get rid of it.
Yeah, that's right. You have to refinance out of that now, because FHA PMI is private mortgage insurance and is permanent. And so the only way to get rid of it is to refi out of it. And of course, then the conversation becomes, well, what if I've got a 4% rate?
Yeah.
Well, then you do the math.
Right.
And, you know, we found people that had 4.25% on a rate, but then their mortgage insurance was $200 a month. And so it made sense to trade it in for a 4.75% or a 4.875% on the conventional side and get rid of that PMI. So it's fairly common to have that problem. The only way you can get out of having it, and well, you're not going to get out of having it at the beginning, but if you do a shorter term, or if you do a lower loan to value, like below 90% when you get an FHA loan, then there's always the chance that it'll go away in 11 years.
Yeah, you know, that whole deal is distasteful to me. I haven't liked it from the first day. It just doesn't.
Well, it hasn't always been that way.
It doesn't seem like that's a fair and equitable way to do mortgage insurance to me.
What, you're dealing with the government, Keith.
Yeah. That so explains everything.
That explains it all, doesn't it? Well, listen, Chris here from County Bank Mortgage, Keith Clark from the Buyer's Broker. We're going to head into our first break of the day. We'd love to take your questions, calls, and comments. 866-442-7553 is the toll-free number. Or you can hit us up on the text line at 71307. That's 71307. We get back, we're going to talk a little bit about real estate. We'll see you on the backside. Welcome back. You're listening to House Plans. Chris from County Bank Mortgage in the house. Keith Clark from the Buyer's Broker. Here to answer your questions, calls, comments, 866-442-7553. Or you can hit us up on the text line 71307. We already had our first question of the day, which was how do you get rid of your PMI on your FHA loan? And the only way to do that is to refinance that loan. And the best way to start that is to send an email to askjd@countybankmortgage.com. That's askjd@countybankmortgage.com. And then JD can work you up a little scenario so that you can see how much money you can save doing that. And, of course, if you'd prefer to call, you can always call us at 331-HOME. That's 331-4663. We'd love to help you out with that. You know, we were looking at one week before last, and it was a similar situation where the MI was about $202 a month, and the rate was going to go up about a half, but they were going to save $132 a month in payment when it was all said and done. So not $132 is a lot of money, and so not a hard decision to make.
You got to look at it in the long run, right?
That's right.
You got to do that math in the long run, particularly if you're going to be in the house long.
That's right. How long are you going to be around? You're going to stick around? You're going to, you know, there's that entire conversation needs to be had so that you kind of know where you're going and what you're doing. You know, one of the other things, Keith, that has been big news is we have, and we've been talking about this for a couple of years, we have seen more and more appraisal waivers coming from the agencies. And when I say agencies, of Fannie and Freddie. The government loans do not do this, where you can get waivers on appraisals. And it seems like Fannie and Freddie believe now that they have enough data to make an intelligent decision about what the value of the property is, which I find very interesting.
Not just interesting. For me, it just seems, I don't want to say ridiculous. Not ridiculous, but... how can you know, it's using artificial intelligence to determine
yes.
the value of the property without seeing it. And I can tell you that it's almost impossible. And when I say that, you cannot value a property without looking at the areas around the property, right?
More than that, what about the condition?
Oh yeah, no. You can debate
right.
Evaluating the property based on good, high quality, accurate data, and we do that. We use data, fields of data, to value property, but there are so many variables outside of the property.
Right.
Commercial activity. In many instances, view can encompass so many things.
True.
So if you have an industrial site adjacent to your or down the street from your home, it
sure.
is likely to have a negative impact on,
on
the values.
Track.
And data by itself will not tell you that.
Yes, absolutely. But you know, I just find it very interesting. Of course, you know, we talked about this when it first happened several years ago. But you know, now. Every single time that we get an appraisal, we have to take that appraisal and when we're selling a loan into the secondary market, and we have to upload that appraisal into Fannie Mae site and Freddie Mac site, and then we get feedback from them as to how they would rank that appraisal in two ways. One would be, what do they think the quality of the appraisal is? And then second, do they think there's a high or low risk of inflated value? And then it will tell you about the appraisal from a quality standpoint. It will say, for example, comparable number three is reported at less square footage than prior reporting. And so they are building this huge database of every single property and what the appraiser said about it last time. And of course, they tell you don't share this with the appraiser, don't make the appraiser necessarily correct it, but they're just letting you know this is a little different than what we saw last time. And then they're also telling you, hey, we think on a scale of 1 to 5, with, you know, 1 being the best and 5 being the worst, what we think the value is, the value we think as compared to the value the appraiser thought. And of course, you know, if you get a 2, you know, then they will give you a waiver, so that I'm not responsible for the appraisal moving forward. You can actually get a waiver there. And of course, that is where they're getting all the data to sometimes say, no, we're good with this one. You don't need an appraisal.
PIW.
That, you know, funny, it used to be a property inspection waiver, and now they have switched that to call it an appraisal waiver.
Okay.
And, of course, it's optional.
We would always, you know, on the buy side, I'm going to recommend to get an appraisal. Not everybody does, but 9 out of 10 of my clients will get one. Sometimes you're paying for an expense that's not a necessary expense, but many times necessary doesn't mean it's not wise to get one. Right?
Exactly. And as you like to say, the cheapest is not always the least expensive.
That's
and,
right.
Of course, that would be a big one, not knowing what the property's worth. You know, I can give you two examples that I've recently seen, both of which you and I talked about. One of them is some folks came down from the north and bought on the lake at Lake Greenwood, which is a beautiful lake, you know, and it was a model home from a tour of homes, and it had every single upgrade that you could put in a property. And when they viewed the property, they were like, perfect, what's not to like? And of course, because they were moving from a much more expensive area, they decided to pay cash without getting an appraisal. And then 3 years later, when they went to sell the property, they were shocked at what it appraised for, because it came in much lower than they expected.
Right.
And, you know, their perception of the value of the real estate in New York, where they came from, is going to be completely different.
And they did it without data, without anything. Yeah.
It's got every bell and whistle. Yeah. This is a great price.
If you're selling a home for $200 a square foot, and you move here and see one of similar construction and quality, and it's $100 a foot.
That's on the water.
Yeah.
then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm
you're in. Very smart real estate valuer. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that can cause a problem. And so, you know, one of the things we have seen folks do, though, Keith, is they'll say, look, for my loan, and you can do this, for my loan, I don't want you to order an appraisal. We'll just roll with the loan so we don't have to deal with it. But I'm going to get one.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I like it.
Yeah.
One of the things the listeners need to know about that is, if you choose to go down that road, you know, obviously you can pick any appraiser you want, which could be good or bad, you know, because they are good. There are good appraisers and bad appraisers. But if you get into a situation where something changes in the loan and now you have to have an appraisal, I, as the lender, can't use yours.
Right.
And so then you would end up getting two. And so we would always recommend that you get an appraisal. And then the question is, do you want me to order it and then I have to use it? Or do, and I do, I have to use it.
And you order it blindly from a list, right?
Yeah, well, we have a group of appraisers that we've built over the 18 years that we've been in business, people that we've worked with, people that we know. We've had some retire, and so we've replaced them with some new ones. And so, yes, it comes from a pool of people that we've worked with. And then, you know, we randomly, you know, we hit the button and it randomly searches who's up next. And then it says, hey, we're going to assign. That's part of the appraisal independence that both Fannie and Freddie require, so that you're not involved. And, of course, as you well know, if you're going down the VA road, then it's different. You have to go to the VA website, and you don't know who you're going to get.
Yeah, and there are just two or three of them, aren't there?
Yeah, well, it seems that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is absolutely blind. And there's a lot of rules tied to the appraisal. as it relates to a government loan. You know, they have what they call, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, Keith, that amendatory clause that always gives the veteran the option to back out if the home doesn't appraise.
Right.
So on a VA loan, you can't say we're going to buy it no matter what, but it gives them the right to back out if they want to. Now they don't have to.
And our new contract, it's changed several times over the last few years. It gives the seller the unilateral right, I believe it does, to reduce the price to the appraised price without the buyer having the option of rescinding.
Yeah, so if you come in, contract at 210, you get an appraisal at 200. If the seller agrees to go to 200.
Unilaterally, it's still binding.
It's still binding. That's interesting. I don't see that very often, but that's an interesting way to do it. Usually what we see is let's have a conversation.
Yeah,
let's look for some comparables.
Yeah.
Let's try to figure out where we are. Well, listen, if you've got a question about buying, selling, anything to do with the real estate, give us a shout this morning, 866-442-7553. Or you can hit us up on the text line 71307. That's 71307. Chris from County Bank Mortgage here in the house, and Keith Clark from the Buyer's Broker. So we're ready to take your calls, questions, comments.
I may have offended our Gamecock listeners.
No, it's not possible. I live with three of them. It's not possible. Yeah. So, it was me against the world, I can tell you that. Yeah, so I don't think you have to worry about that, Keith. So one of the conversations that you have, I know, and you do as much work as I've ever seen when it comes to evaluating the property before you make that offer is, you know, like you said, what's going on in that area? Why did you pick that area and what sold in that area? And, of course, what you, in my world, the appraisal doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you could sell the property for. And I think sometimes there's confusion there. All it's telling you is what just happened most recently in that area. And you and I worked on one last week where not a happy situation, but somebody built built a house up on what was it, Lake Lyman?
I believe so.
And there were three comparable sales during the 12 months while it was under construction that made the value go down, which was kind of surprising to both me and you.
That's right.
But when you look at the data, that's what happened. And so, you know, they contracted for I think it was $550, and then the appraisal comes in a year later at $525, and you can imagine they weren't very happy.
Now, and they had a better appraisal in hand when they started the building process.
Yes, for a higher value.
That's right. Yeah. And so the recent data, and I've seen that several times over the last 4 or 5 years, where the data a year ago or 18 months to a year ago was better than the data in the last 6 months.
Sure. And, of course, you know, if you do have a motivated seller that is going to take less than what you and I might consider as market, and that house sells, then that can be a comparable. And, you know, as a general rule, the appraiser is going to start with proximity. How close are the homes? Because we like to start in the same neighborhood. And then, you know, you kind of match them up from there to try to figure out, you know, what are the best comparables to use.
And you know, we worked one that comes to my mind when you're talking, Chris, is you and I worked on one about a year and a half ago. And I did not really know that proximity is important to the appraiser. So even a dissimilar property in close proximity is likely to get used, even if it's a different level of construction.
Absolutely.
And you know, there are four or five levels of construction. You can go value production local, quality,
yep,
very good quality, and then extreme quality. I mean, so you're talking about six or seven different types of quality in the building of a home.
Well, you know, and we saw this in the downturn, Keith, where a local production builder started a project, did not finish the project, and then a national builder came in more square footage for less money, but not anywhere close to the quality.
That's right.
Well, listen, we're going to head into our bottom of the hour break for the news. If you've got a question about buying, selling, anything to do with real estate, give us a shout, 866-442-7553, or you can hit us up on the text line at 71307. Chris from County Bank in the house, Keith Clark from the Buyer's Broker. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to House Plans. Chris from County Bank Mortgage in the house. Keith Clark from the Buyer's Broker here to answer your question, calls, comments. You can reach us at 866-442-7553. And, of course, you can hit us up on the text line at 71307. We got our first caller of the day, Bill, on a sale. And so let's go over to Bill. How's it going, Bill?
Good morning. It's going great. A little wind out here, but not too bad. I got a couple of questions on a VA mortgage.
Okay.
I'm currently in a VA mortgage and wanted to know if there's any time restraints on restructuring that VA loan and how many times you can restructure. And also, does it make any difference as to whether you, when you restructure, stay where you're at, or can you buy a new home or go into a used home or what?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are some rules about refinancing a VA loan. There was some concern by the government that people were what they call churning those loans. In other words, just every 90 days trying to talk people into refinancing. And so now when you get a VA loan, you have to wait 210 days from that loan's first payment, really, to be able to refi the loan. So 210-day wait period before you can refi. And so, as far as buying new or refinancing what you got, the VA offers on a refi, you have what's called a IRL loan, which is a streamlined refi. And so in that particular question, in that particular case, it's very easy to do a refi on a VA loan and just redo the interest rate. It's called an IRL and a very popular loan. If you go out and buy new, then there's some math you have to do as it relates to your entitlement, is what they call it. And you have to do that math depending upon whether you're going to sell the current home or not. So a lot of people will tell you you can't have two VA loans at the same time, which is not necessarily true. It's all about the math for how much entitlement you have.
Yeah.
One of the other advantages to the VA loan, of course, is that you can go above the conforming limit on that VA loan. And so they offer that guarantee. You know, I've done some as big as $1 million on a loan, and that's a nice thing about having a VA.
Now, Bill needs to send Ask JD.
That's right. Are you looking at doing a refi, Bill?
Yes.
Yeah.
And another question quickly about that. If I've currently got the VA loan with one mortgage company, and then I want to switch to, say, maybe you guys.
Yes.
On a new refi or whatever you call it. Do I have to start all over, or do you just assume my current VA loan and go from there, or what?
We would do an IRL in most cases if you're not trying to cash out. And so we would be making a new loan, but it would be a streamlined process. Oftentimes you don't have to have an appraisal, very limited documentation, and it's a great way to refinance your VA loan without having to go through a lot of hoopla. So we would be happy to handle it for you. You can shoot an email to JD at askjd@countybankmortgage.com, or you can give him a shout at 331-HOME, which is 331-4663.
JD will make it easy if he just sends. I think JD likes to get the copy. If he sends him a copy of his mortgage statement, boom.
He'll knock it out. Well, look, Bill, we'd be happy to help you.
Okay, thank you very
much. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Day.
You too.
I wonder if Bill knew that we were – do you know that we're in the coolest city in America? Do you know that?
I did hear that. You can go search it on Google, right?
That's right. Just coolest city in America.
All right. Well, we got another caller on the line. Let's jump over to George. Got a question about appraisals. Good morning, George.
Good morning. I hope y'all guys are doing well.
Yeah, doing fantastic.
Great. We bought a house about 4 years ago. last year we basically tore out the wall between the kitchen and the dining room and updated the kitchen because it hadn't been touched since it was built in 1970.
Okay.
My question is, how do I go about getting a good appraisal? Because the house, when it was built from everything I've seen, fairly good quality.
Right.
It's not like some of the other houses I've seen. So how do I go about getting a good appraisal? Is there something I need to tell the appraiser?
Yeah, well, what? Generally, what's the purpose of the appraisal?
We're still paying PMI.
Ah, okay.
And we're just wanting to get it. A new appraisal to give to the bank to help knock that out, and also to make sure what we've got it insured for, if something was to happen, knock on wood, hopefully it won't, that it would be covered under the insurance.
Yeah, so you got two choices there. One would be to, you know, go to a new lender and refinance it, and the other would be to get an appraisal and then submit that appraisal to your current servicer and ask them to review it and to take off your mortgage insurance. Before you engage an appraiser to do that, though, you need to call them and have a conversation with them about what their rules and regulations are about getting rid of the MI and what they require. I have seen situations where they will do an automated evaluation model, which we call an AVM, and not even make you get an appraisal. And so I've seen that happen. And then I've also seen situations where they will say, look, you have to order an appraisal and you have to order it through these folks. And I've also seen situations where they say, we have to order the appraisal and we're going to order it from these folks. And so each servicer is a little different. Do you have a government loan or a conventional loan?
Conventional loan.
Okay, conventional loan, because I was going to say you can't really get rid of the MI on a government loan, and so I wanted to make sure I brought that up. But I would call your servicer, and I would ask them what the steps are to get it removed, and then they'll probably tell you the first step is to make the request in writing to them, and then they will send you a list of what you have to do to make that happen.
All righty.
And then let me comment.
I was going to say one other thing, too. If you end up needing, if they will allow you to order an appraisal, then call us, and we can give you some folks on our list that we know are, you know, that do a great job.
Yeah, and that's the direction I was going, George. It's important, particularly when quality is a differentiator, that the appraiser be very local, and what I mean that they are intimate with the market in and around the subject property and have enough experience to be able to accurately reflect what you've done. And that's not always the case. So it is important that you get the right appraiser if you're in control of choosing them. And so, as I said, you shoot JD an email and
Just say, you know, ask JD at countybankmortgage.com and say, hey, I'm looking for I live in this area and I'm looking for a reputable appraiser, and we can give you a couple
but
of names.
But he should tell him he talked to us on the show.
Oh, absolutely.
And what your purpose in it is, because the appraiser, where they come from is important.
Where they come from is important.
All righty. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, George. Great question. We appreciate it. Have a good one.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we do see that because of the situation that we're in our local market, Keith, with the increase in values. We have seen lots of folks inquiring about how I've got this great rate on this loan that I got 4 or 5 years ago. How do I get rid of this mortgage insurance? And the number one thing is to make sure you talk to your current servicer about removing the PMI, not doing a refi, you know, if you got that great rate. Now, if you want to know what a refi would look like on a government loan, then give us a call at 331-HOME. That's 331-4663. We'll be happy to help you. But each servicer has their own rules about how to get rid of it. And actually, Fannie and Freddie just recently came out with new guidelines that were more in the customer's favor.
Yeah, so, because the lenders generally would prefer that you leave the PMI on there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then we do have a text question. We'll take it on the backside of this break about MI. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back. You're listening to House Plans. Chris Roberts from County Bank Mortgage in the house. Keith Clark from the Buyer's Broker here to answer your questions, calls, and comments about real estate. Give us a shout this morning, 866-442-7553. Or you can hit us on the text line 71307. And we do have a text question, Keith. And it's about PMI insurance. And the question is, how often does the PMI insurance company sue defaulted homeowners? So I think that's a very interesting question. That is not how PMI works. Basically, what the PMI does is you're buying insurance that protects your lender. And the lender is protected. So if you were to foreclose on a property that has mortgage insurance on it, you would foreclose, you would sell the house, you would have a loss. The assumption is you would have a loss. The lender would have a loss on that. And then the lender would file a claim with the mortgage insurance company to pay part of that loss. It's not like a make whole type deal in most cases. So you're only getting part of that money back.
Now, I think, and Chris, what they may be, and if there is a deficiency,
yes,
then the lender can, and sometimes does, right, sue the homeowner.
They could. For, I have not seen that very much.
Now, we saw that during the downturn, right?
We did, but you have to jump through a lot more hoops to foreclose if you're going to try to go for the deficiency. And so oftentimes what we will see is that they'll waive that. They just want to get it. They want to turn it as quickly as possible because, as you know, Keith, time is money in real estate. And if it takes you a year to foreclose on somebody, all the lender's doing is just spending money.
And this is another fallout of that scenario. Congress passed, I believe, Chris, they passed some legislation five or six years ago that allowed, the IRS used to come after you as they
yes.
considered that income, that
yeah,
deficiency
if,
income,
yes,
right?
If you did a short sale or if, yes. So, you know, if you had 200 in it and you sold it for 175, there was a time where the IRS would go, oh, that's a $25,000 capital gain for you.
That's right.
And they would come after you. And, of course, because of the massive amount of short sales that occurred during the downturn, they did pass some legislation to give some relief there, which at the time was a fantastic idea.
And in today's environment, the foreclosures, first of all, they're really close to all-time lows.
Yes, and delinquencies are at all-time lows.
And secondly, in a foreclosure scenario, because of the market conditions, oftentimes the lender can be made whole, or in even some instances, they might make some money on the deal.
Possible.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often, but possible. And so the way the mortgage insurance works in that particular case is to help the lender recover their losses. And so when you look at a loan like, let's say, an FHA loan, you know, when you're doing 96.5% and the borrower is only bringing 3.5 to the table, there is significant risk in that particular loan. And, of course, that 3.5% on an FHA loan can come from a gift, from an employer, from a down payment assistance program like the Federal Home Loan Bank. And so, you know, you may actually buy that house, and that 3.5% may not be your 3.5%. And so, you know, very inexpensive to get into the property as it relates to the closing. And of course, that mortgage insurance is there to protect the lender at that high loan-to-value in case something goes wrong. Same thing for VA. You know, VA is 100% loan. USDA, 100% loan. And in those particular situations, when you've got those 100% loans, not many lenders would take those risks without the government's insurance program backing that product. And then, you know, now on the Fannie and Freddie side, so when you do Fannie and Freddie, you can do a 97% loan. And in that case, we're going out and as the lender, we're going out and contracting with another mortgage insurance company, and we have several that we use that is going to review your file and then turn around and insure your file. And in those cases, it's not 100% guarantee on what goes south. It's only a portion of the, because each MI type of loan has a certain amount of coverage, and so you're only protecting a certain amount of that loss in a conventional situation.
Wow.
And so they're unlikely, the PMI company is unlikely to come after the homeowner because they're going to be dealing directly with the lender. And, of course, in our situation, what we're worried about is, you know, did we dot all the I's and cross all the T's so that they don't rescind that coverage, which was another huge problem.
Yeah, and tell them what happens when they do that.
Yeah, when they do that, they say, hey, we told you you were covered, but we're out. You know, it'd be like having a life insurance.
And they send that loan back to you,
yeah,
right?
Well, they just say, we're not going to pay the loss.
Right.
And one of the other things that came out of the downturn from a legislative standpoint is that is much less likely now, where it is unusual at this point for an MI company, a private MI company, to be able to rescind coverage because of all the new rules, which is more certainty for us.
Yeah.
You know, because you had people filing claims, and you had the MI company go, oh, no.
We don't like that claim.
You messed that one up. You know, you didn't. You know, I had one time that tried to rescind coverage during the downturn because the amount of rent that the borrower paid on the prior home, not the home they were in when we closed, when they bought the new one, was not reported on the 1003.
Yeah.
Which is the application. And I was like, boy, you're grasping at straws, yeah, there. But they were rescinding coverage because they were trying to stay out of bankruptcy.
Wow.
And then, of course, you know, there were a lot of companies at that time that were in the mortgage insurance business.
Yeah, there was a consolidation in that business, right?
Absolutely. Of monumental proportions. And, of course, you had the big AIG bailout and all that kind of good stuff that was all tied in that whole mess.
It's funny, Chris, how far we're getting away from, you know, some of these things we haven't talked about in a very long time.
True.
We were talking off the air about the refundable tax credits, and
yeah,
those were
things. I mean, it does seem a little crazy that the government was giving away money to entice you to go buy a house.
Yeah, it's really.
I mean, it is kind of crazy. I had actually forgotten about it until you brought it up.
10 years ago.
Yeah, but you could get money for buying a house as
they
a tax credit.
That's right.
Yeah, so it is very interesting. Of course, I actually saw for the first time in 2 or 3 years a short sale this week.
Did you? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was the house was in terrible condition, and the seller was in jail, and you know, and was not paying. And
that's not a good scenario.
It was not good. And but the only, you know, because of the condition, you know, we're talking about this earlier when we're talking about you know, electronic appraisals. The condition of the property was such that it warranted a discount in price, which was about $10,000 or $15,000 less than what was owed on the property.
Yeah.
And of course, the bank would rather have somebody come in and take that house off their hands than having to fix it up, foreclose, and all that kind of good stuff. So it's the first one I've seen in a while, and it's amazing how they can do that,
yeah,
in short order.
Yeah.
Now, I remember being on the show and talking about, okay, you're going to do a short sale. That's going to take 120 days minimum.
Yeah, at least.
And you're going to talk to 92 people, and they're all going to tell you something different. And of course, today, you know, the efficiencies needed and the legislation that was passed requires them, you know, to give you one point of contact, so they can't. Mary's not here today,
right?
You know, you know, you'll have to start over with Bob. You know, you can't do that anymore. And so it's amazing how much more efficient this entire. It didn't even really create
one
a
of
blip.
I saw an article just in the last 2 weeks where one of the big boxes settled with the government regarding foreclosures that occurred that should not have occurred.
Yes.
I don't know who it was. I don't remember, but it was one of the big boys.
Yeah, we got another text question, Keith. It's right up your alley here. It says, hi, I'm Kyle. Just recently relocated from San Diego, California, And first of all, we say welcome to God's country. And then it says, can you please explain the 4% primary residence and the 6% investment property tax?
Yeah.
So that's the first part of the question. So we'll hit that real quick. Essentially, the tax rate is 6%.
The default position.
The default position on all real estate, residential real estate, is 6% in the state of South Carolina. And then they offer a credit back to you if this is your one and only primary residence. And a lot of folks think, especially that come, you know, you hear 4%, you hear 6%, you think that it's one-third different. But it's actually, the refund is closer to about two-thirds, right, Keith?
That's right. So your primary residence, and we should say when you're calculating, the county has I had a client this week want to know what their taxes were going to be on a purchase. And the county has a little tool on the website that allows you to either choose, take the tax map number from the subject property.
Right.
Or the fire district, if you know the taxing district that it's in, and you can calculate within $50 what your anticipated taxes are. But here's the key. It's the when we say 4% or 6%, it's 4 or 6 times the value of the house times the millage rate.
Right.
So in the millage rate usually ranges from about 250 mils to 350 mils, depending on whether you're in a incorporated area like the city of Simpsonville or downtown Greenville.
Sure. And of course, the difference would be if your primary is $2,000. If you did not apply for that, it would be $6,000. Pretty close.
I mean, that's right.
It's going to be
actually
three
a little
times
more. So a good way to calculate it is your primary residence would be between $600 and $800 per $100,000. So if you're estimating, you can use 6 to 8 per $100,000. And if it's going to be a 6% investment property, you can do 3 times that plus a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there was a follow-up question about capital gains in South Carolina on investment properties. I'm not familiar with that particular rule. Does anything come up to you that's particular to South Carolina?
Yeah, no, I think you, not to the state. I think you pay the capital gains based on the federal tax rate, and then you'll report it on your state return, and I'm not sure what the implication
is.
Yeah,
and if you want to have that conversation off the air, because we've got about 10 seconds.
We'll answer it next year.
331-4663. You can give us a shout during the week. Everybody have a great weekend, and we appreciate all the listeners and callers and texters. We'll see you next week.